Beginning in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. This is the Rain Report, the audio ham radio feature magazine of the Internet. Note to our listeners that if you missed part one of this week's talk by Dr. Greg Lappin, you'll still find a link to it from the front page of rainreport.com, thanks to audio bandwidth costs for archiving last week's program being underwritten by CQ Communications. I'm Blair Alper, KA9SEQ. Do you believe everything you read? You shouldn't, especially when it comes to publicity resulting from controversial laboratory research connected with RF safety. Greg Lappin, N9GL, holds a doctorate in electrical engineering from Northwestern University. These days, Greg is an Illinois registered professional engineer, a member of the IEEE Committee on Man and Radiation, and chair of the American Radio Relay League's RF Safety Committee. In his 2004 Dayton Hamvention Forum talk, Dr. Lappin advised us to be skeptical about published conclusions drawn from laboratory research.
I won't just talk about RF now. I'll talk about some things that you probably remember. In the laboratory, because you don't have a whole lifetime, and we're talking about a 30, 40-year lifetime, or 50 or more, to expose an animal, because a rat in the laboratory, you can't expect it to live more than 2 years, and that's pretty long. What you do is you try to intensify the exposure to see if anything will happen. Well, if you remember back in the 60s, more in the 70s, there were a spate of these kind of studies with chemicals. Remember saccharin. Saccharin causes cancer in laboratory rats, in quotes, on the little pink envelopes. Every single one said that. If you look at one today, sweet and low, that's not there anymore. There were cyclamates. They caused cancer. About everything they tested chemically, they did this way. They overloaded a rat with so much of this stuff that they're trying to make a quick response, and they got a quick response. Let me tell you about the saccharin one. Saccharin is a sweetener. It's the one in the pink packets. At the time, they wanted to see if it was dangerous. So they took lots and lots of saccharin, probably more saccharin than a person would ingest in a lifetime, and gave it to a rat in short order. A good number of those rats got bladder cancer. Right there, they said, this is not good. Let's stop people from using saccharin. In those days, cooler heads prevailed, and they said, the industry especially said, well, look, you've shown a bunch of rats with bladder cancer, but where's all the bladder cancer out there in the public? If this is causing bladder cancer, we should see a certain amount of it. There's obviously some, but there doesn't seem to be an excess of it. So instead, why don't we negotiate a little and agree that you can put a statement on our product saying that it causes cancer in laboratory rats, but you won't make us stop selling it. And that's what happened. And for 20 to 25 years, that's the way it was. 25 years later, someone thought to restudy this, and they found an interesting thing. When you overload a rat with saccharin, it forms crystals of saccharin in its urine, or a byproduct of saccharin. And those crystals, which have sharp little corners, land in the bladder and irritate it, so much so, cutting it up, that eventually, with all the cells dying and replicating, there are a certain number of DNA breaks that probably get together wrong and you get cancer growing. That, in fact, is the way that a lot of cancer is thought to form, just continuous cell replication when there shouldn't be. So they said, the chemical has nothing to do with causing the cancer in rats. It's those crystals. And the only reason the rats had those crystals form was that you gave them too much. Even if you gave a human that much, it doesn't happen in humans, it just happens in rats. If you go look on a pink packet, you won't see something that says cancer in laboratory rats. That was taken off sometime in the mid-90s. But it took that long for people to realize their mistake. A large number of mistakes. I can't even remember all the things when I was a kid that were supposed to give us cancer. Remember, coffee was one of them. Those scares came along, more so in the 70s, though, I remember. There were just a couple years where every time you turned around, something else was giving you cancer. But much of those things have been disproven because of the way they studied it. So we have to be very careful when we look at what someone says they did with RF. If you give too much RF to a person or an animal, first thing you do is you heat them up. Instead of a low exposure like we get from our cell phones or our ham radios, we get a heating exposure, like a microwave oven. Well, a heating exposure obviously is going to cause problems. Cells will die if they get raised to a temperature of much more than 105 degrees. If we're normally sitting around at 98 degrees, just going up 7 degrees can kill these cells. That's not much of a margin. And again, like I said, skin cells are different. They're made differently just for that reason, because they're on the outside. But the stuff on the inside in the core of our body is very sensitive to temperature change. So we don't want to heat that up. So we got to be very careful about that. So you can't accelerate a study too much, because if you cause heating, then you've changed the mechanism of what's going on, just like the crystals in the bladder. There's no relationship between heating up a rat and you're using a cell phone or talking on your ham radio.
You're listening to a talk about misleading conclusions based on faulty laboratory research by Dr. Greg Lappin, N9GL.
You're listening to RainReport.com, the only authorized internet source for rain audio.
One of the things you can do, though, with laboratory studies, because you have such good controls, when you can control it well, you don't need that many subjects. You don't need to measure a million rats to understand something. You can usually get by with under 100. You can have an excellent control of the exposure, you know, except for the problems of clamping a rat into something that makes his blood pressure shoot up because he gets upset. You can get all kinds of very carefully made exposure systems where you know that that rat is being continuously exposed to a fixed amount, and it's not varying all over the time. Because of this, you can demonstrate a cause and effect. If you illuminate something in a laboratory, and I don't mean just rats, but could be cells in a dish, if you illuminate them and an effect happens, now you can start to zero in on the cause and effect. You controlled everything about the environment or even the amount of energy you're putting in, and you see something different happening. However, it is often hard to determine if there are public health ramifications of these laboratory effects. That's a very difficult thing for many of these smaller effects that are being shown. Yet, boy, when they hit the press, they scream about it. Look what RF did today. Now, in the laboratory, you can study organisms. You can take a bunch of rats or mice and expose them. Some of the studies were done with monkeys. Monkeys are good because they behave much more closely to humans than rats or mice. Many of our standards today are based on a series of studies on monkeys. You can train monkeys to be happy about being clamped into an exposure system, and they didn't get upset. And they set up these monkeys with feeder bars. You hit the bar and you get food. And they found, in a series of studies done through the 70s and 80s, that these monkeys, when you irradiated them with different frequencies of RF in the head, they'd stop hitting the feeder bar as often. And they did this series of studies, and they said, well, when we go above a certain amount of RF, at that time it was just incident RF, the monkey doesn't want as much food, so there must be something wrong with the way his brain's working. That level became the level at which a standard was set. Later on, someone did the mathematics and modeling and figured out that that amount of energy was a certain amount of specific absorption rate, and that became what was determined to be the safe specific absorption rate in the brain. Now also, besides organisms, people do studies in the lab on cells. You can just take a bunch of cells, like cancer cells. There was one study where they took a bunch of cancer cells in a disc, shined RF at it, and they said, look, the cancer cells are growing faster. There were flaws found in that study later, and again, it was very difficult to replicate, but that one was widely disseminated. People talked about that one quite a bit. Cancer cells in dishes are not cancer cells in humans. It's very unclear what that means, but at least showing a difference gives you something to start looking at. And then there's subcellular dynamics, like I mentioned before, about calcium channels. Calcium channels in cells, you can measure the rate of their pumping, and you can see if it changes under the influence of RF. Finally, there's computer modeling. People are beginning to discount a lot of these studies that say that the RF is affecting the DNA and causing cancer. A group in Sweden did a computer model showing that an RF field can set up dipole moments, and various polarized cells, like blood cells in your body, will line up with those dipoles, with the RF. They'll all line up together. If they all line up together, now it becomes a bunch of speculation. Well, what happens if they all get together and clot and make blood clots and cause something bad? Interesting study, but you can't say much about it. It's, again, a starting point, not an ending point. They should take their computer model elsewhere. Yet, when it hit the press, it was, again, a big headline. Study in Sweden shows that blood is affected by RF. This group probably will do some good work because they started at a very basic level. They came up with something that the computer said they should study, so now they should go study it.
This has been the second excerpt from a 2004 Dayton Hamvention presentation by Dr. Greg Lappin, N9GL, a registered professional engineer in Illinois, a member of the IEEE Committee on Man and Radiation, and chair of the American Radio Relay League's RF Safety Committee. The RAIN Report is copyright 2004 RAIN, all rights reserved. Now, for RAIN's founder-producer, Hap Holly, KC9RP, I'm Blair Alper, KA9SEQ 73.